Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and I'll be here today to talk to you about three top issues in international education news from this past week. We're going to look at a recent GAO report on accreditation and the implications it has for DHS and institutions that are on the margins, shall we say, of international education. We'll look at an interesting take on Varsity Blues. We're going to pit Chinese students and parents versus Varsity Blues U.S. style, and see who goes to further extremes. And then we'll also look and close today with a look at virtual tours. So not a new concept in international education, but certainly one that is ever important in what we do in international ed. And we'll take a look at what U.S. commercial services are doing to support institutions in their attempts to present their campuses virtually to students around the world, as well as their parents. So for those of you who are new to joining us for this midweek roundup, we do these every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's an opportunity to share what we think about at Social Media and International Ed Consulting, our thoughts on where these topics are taking us as institutions and as an industry in international education circles in the world we live in. And we'll talk today about these three issues and about how we can potentially adapt what potential issues that come out of these topics to what we do in international ed at our institutions and with our organizations. So I really appreciate you joining me today, and we'll be covering a lot of the news stories that we feature each week in our SMIE, all the SMIE news that's fit to share. It's a newsletter that comes out every Monday, and I'll be putting in the comments section when I'm allowed on the Facebook page the details of these topics that are covered in the SMIE newsletter. Certainly encourage you to subscribe to that. We'll have the links in the comments section as those become available later today. So we appreciate you joining us for this. Let's start with a U.S. GAO report. That's the Government Accountability Office. And this is, they do reports on all sorts of, all U.S. GAO, all sorts of government-related topics and analysis of the effectiveness and efficiencies of different parts of federal government. And they reported, this is a recent report, just came out this past week, and it takes a look at sham schools that GAO has covered in the past on the fraud in the Student Exchange Visitor Program. And anyone who's been in the news in the last few weeks and months certainly is aware of these issues. Certainly, the University of Farmington was not a sham university. It was a fake university created by the U.S. government to address issues of identify who recruiters were that were bringing students to institutions with no real intent of studying and only intent on working, the pay-to-stay schemes that we've heard about. So this GAO report recommends that that DHS, which has oversight over SEVIS and institutions that are legally allowed to enroll international students, that they further enhance controls over school and school employees to help mitigate fraud. And I will say that this is a topic, and certainly I'm glad the GAO is covering this, but certainly what is missing to a large extent in this report is the larger issue of the disconnect between, and this is my point, the disconnect between SEVIS eligibility and accreditation. For many institutions that are above board, and certainly in the not-for-profit world, many institutions, accreditation by your regional accreditor is an important part of every institution's existence. There are committees that are formed years in advance of the actual visit by the accreditation team. That's intensive internal studies are done, looking at outcomes and all these other factors. that for regionally accredited nonprofit schools, even some for-profit regionally accredited schools, these are very intensive processes. Yet for DHS, their requirements are frankly more cumbersome for as they exist right now to be certified for a to become a SEVP school that allows you to issue I-20s and potentially I-20s to international students that might be looking to come to the United States. So we see the challenge really with these with the existing regulations for DHS is they now require and anyone who's been on is on an institutional campus certainly knows how fraught with challenges recertification is these days. Recent reports indicate there's anywhere from a 12-month to an 18-month backlog on recertification. So by the time for some of these institutions that are applying for recertification for their programs, they can't actually enroll students in those programs until after recertification has happened. And if that's happening there's a 12 to 18 month backlog now, it could be by the time they get recertified, they almost immediately need to turn around and become certified again, even though that there will be obviously an extension on the time that they're being considered on that backlog. But the challenge is any institution, and Karen Fisher from the Chronicle pointed this out very well in her newsletter this week, Latitudes, about the challenges are if you're an institution trying to adjust your programming to meet the needs of a very dynamic international student market, and you add new programs, you make modifications to others, that process is ground to a halt because of the intense bureaucratic certification requirements from the Department of Homeland Security. And frankly, those requirements should be tiered because we know where the troubles have been for visa mills in that DHS has had to create these two fake universities, North New Jersey and Farmington, to address some of these issues. But you have others in California, Silicon Valley University, Northwest Poly, and now an institution in Virginia is under investigation, unfortunately not by DHS, but rather by the Virginia State Council on Higher Education in Virginia has issued a report recommending that administrative processes be undertaken to revoke VIU, Virginia International University's certificate to operate. This institution is a for-profit that's been around for a few years and enrolls primarily international students in its online programs, but also its in-person programs on campus. So it has been on the radar of as a potential sham or visa mill institution. But it's also it's one of those institutions that is ASICS accredited. And you remember in the Obama administration, ASICS accreditation was ASICS as an accrediting body was they've lost their ability to accredit, which meant that all these ASIC schools, which are primarily for-profit career schools, were struggling to find other alternate accreditation. VIU couldn't do that. They stuck with ASICS. ASICS, under the Trump administration, has had a reprieve, so to speak, and been allowed to continue to accredit institutions. But ASICS itself hadn't really taken any action against VIU, and that's part of why the state's Council on Higher Ed in Virginia stepped in to take action against this kind of an institution. So the challenge is why I said accreditation and certification for SEVIS need to be tiered in the way the institutions are recertified. I would certainly much prefer and see as greater value in terms of a bureaucratic changes that have to happen in order for institutions to receive their regional accreditation. I would argue that those regional accreditation guidelines should be pinned to recertification in SEVIS, so that every 10 years, that for most regional accreditors, those are valid for 10 years when they certify or recertify an institution's accreditation. So And frankly, the problems that occur in terms of sham universities are not in the non-for-profit world, largely. They are in the for-profit world. And let's call a spade in this respect, that where the bad actors typically are in the United States on this on visa fraud and visa mills are on the for-profit side, and are largely accredited by national accrediting bodies, like ASICS and at least one other accrediting body for career schools. So my point is that these are the ones where we see, I think, the greatest threats to what we do in international education. So in terms of our own standards, as I mentioned, I'll be posting the links in the comments section to this live video after the event, since Facebook's not allowing me to do that right now. But I do want to make sure we're aware of what these issues are, and I would prefer that if you're going to have this research process for SEVIS to be SEVP certified, that process for for-profits be every 2 years, because that's where the greatest danger, I think, lies in the visa mills. And I would propose that reaccreditation for accreditation in SEVIS for regionally accredited institutions be on an every 10-year basis, again, tied to their regional accreditation. Because right now there's a disconnect. DHS and education accreditation they basically consider all accrediting, CHIA-approved accrediting bodies are the same represent the same kinds of institutions. Clearly not the case. And the GAO report, unfortunately, doesn't really go into that level of detail. They just say that DHS needs to have greater oversight over schools to help mitigate fraud. So there's I'll post again the links to that report, but it's a little bit troubling, and I think it'll be one that we want to keep an eye on and not add to the bureaucracy of good actors on the international stage. Certainly DHS is fee driven. They have obviously limited budget for their staff, but they're in cost recovery mode with SEVIS. It has to pay for itself basically. So that and they've dramatically expanded their staff for the kind of recertification visits, and everybody's got an ICE official that visits their campus at least once a year, but oftentimes twice a year. So these are things that need to be addressed on a larger scale, and perhaps as part of a larger immigration overhaul. Who knows? But we're dreaming if we think that's happening anytime soon. Now, second topic of the week, I want to shift gears and look at what's happening, kind of a topic we've covered the last couple of weeks in some detail, and that's Operation Varsity Blues. We talked, when it first broke, about that impact of Operation Varsity Blues as another potential bad sign for what U.S. International educators had to deal with in terms of reputation for the United States, but I think that's less of a real issue when you look at, frankly, what we talked about last week, and that is how Varsity Blues pales in comparison to what happens internationally. We only give a couple of examples of that, but I want to focus today on a couple of articles that came out in the wake of Varsity Blues that kind of outline what's happening. And this focus on these three articles is really on Chinese students and their parents. The first article relates to Chinese students. It's an opinion column from South China Morning Post that says, when U.S. universities stop admitting subpar Chinese students, the cheating will end too. So this is this kind of goes in line with what we've talked about in the past here, that institutions have seen dollar signs when they've seen Chinese students in the last 10, 15 years, and that's led to institutions accepting the full paying kids that potentially might not be the best matches academically for their institutions, might be lowering standards, might be turning a blind eye to suspect behaviors on the part of agents in China that are being paid by parents to apply for their children to get into top schools on a much broader scale than we ever thought. We think Varsity Blues is a big deal. That's a millions of dollars kind of a situation with Operation Varsity Blues. The industry, so to speak, of cheating And people pay, with through agents, through cheating for testing, through a number of other areas of the college admissions process. It's called a $1 billion a year business. So it is just it's a real challenge for institutions to monitor and to really prioritize them their where they stand ethically when it comes to issues like this. I mentioned the case previously where I would see essays and transcripts that from the same school that were basically identical essays and transcripts that were within one or two grades the same, clearly done by the same agent and not from that school, but I wasn't able to challenge that with the institution. But this is something that I think is a real issue for institutions that have seen the dollar signs and said, damn the consequences. This article is from a Chinese perspective, obviously. It's someone who had come to the U.S. from China back in the 60s and 70s, has gone back and talks about his experience and now how much different it is now. And it's really, whether it's plagiarism, ghostwriting, copying from classmates, those are issues that students are certainly doing, international students and Chinese students and others in the United States. That's a academic culture issue in terms of what's accepted. And plagiarism in China means a very different thing than plagiarism in the United States. I had a colleague who spent a number of years in China relate that story to me recently. He had been working on the advising side, working with students coming to the United States to make sure they were prepared. And when those issues of plagiarism came up, they were talking on two different levels in terms of what that meant, in terms of expectations of the U.S. institutions and what was acceptable in China. This article was particularly insightful given that perspective on the Chinese market. Then there's another article from Foreign Policy. It's how rich Chinese parents get their kids in the U.S. colleges, and this is a direct look at what money will buy you in China. When it comes to getting their students what they will pay to get their students into institutions in the United States. Why do they look at the United States? There's a wide range of issues. Why? Because of intense competitiveness for places at Chinese universities, which have expanded capacity over the last 20 years, but still there aren't enough places for the best students, so they begin to look elsewhere. You see international students are paying, and Chinese students in particular, as this second article from Foreign Policy addresses, that one Chinese student's parents paid $90,000 for a personal agent to help him through the university application process. $90,000. The package that the parents paid guaranteed between 3 and 5 offers from universities in the top 60. Now this student who got in and went to the United States at a West Coast institution said the agent, and this is direct from the article, the agent helped him polish the grammar and structure of his personal essay and made a few suggestions regarding what topics or things I could include. Agent also suggested extracurricular activities that would boost the student's application, as well as going through practice SAT and ACT papers. He said that almost all of his Chinese friends at university contacted an agent somewhere in the process of application. That's nothing necessarily new, but the essay is certainly one of those features for Chinese students that does raise a lot of issues. When we talked about the billion, that Varsity Blues was $1 million kind of issue there, parents paying $1 million plus to get their students into a school in China. When you just look at the test prep industry alone, the article points out in 2016 in China, it was worth $3.9 billion for test prep in terms of ability to access a U.S. institution through these tests like SAT and ACT. There are hundreds, literally hundreds of companies in China that are now promising help to students to navigate admission systems and put together applications that guarantee success according to the application. These are companies, not just necessarily educational agents, which are in the thousands in China. But we look at what's happening in China and the price, the value that they place on being educated in the United States. You really see an incredible difference here. So what I propose on this front, it's not something that institutions are going to get their heads around anytime soon, unless they're willing to commit resources to it, to look at the validity of test scores, to be running using services to assess essays and to confirm details on student transcripts that or activities that they've been involved in that may not be be verifiable anywhere else. So this is something that I think it's a larger question that that institutions need to be very focused on if they're going to really get their heads around the issues that are being faced. Now, one professor at a Maryland university certainly has not got his head around this this issue, and has in fact gone the exact opposite direction. He's recently resigned from his position at the University of Maryland, College Park, where this professor accused a group of Chinese students of cheating, and was accused in turn of discriminating against these students based on their race and national origin. There's a couple of issues with this article. This is from Inside Higher Ed that was put out on the 21st. This professor David Weber recently resigned from that institution. He had a one section of this forensic auditing class he taught and another taught by another faculty. A Chinese student reported that Weber came into the class she was taking, a business ethics class taught by Jeffrey Milton, with a list of names he student with a list of names of students he believed cheated on the final exam in the forensic accounting class. So it wasn't even his class he went into. He went into another class that these students were apparently in, and basically said, "You all cheated on your exams, and you should be have your visas revoked and have to go home, and you'll be expelled from the institution, and just to be incredibly just a loss of face and honor for those students if that happened." And that he was on went on this tirade for 30 minutes, according to the article. This in the course, and this is one of the many issues I have with this. Obviously, a professor doing anything like that publicly is beyond the pale in terms of what would be expected in the classroom. But take a look at what this course, the composition of this course. 90% of the course, business of this forensic accounting class or auditing class, were Chinese. What kind of learning environment is being created on a campus in an academic program, a business program, I assume, or an accounting program, I assume, where you have 90% of your of your students in a class from one country? And the other 10% might have been other internationals, maybe had a few US citizens in that classroom. Probably not. I mean, I've worked at an institution that had 75% of their population in in an MBA program be international. And that was only because a lot of the domestic students have been drawn to to the online MBA program. But this is symptomatic of of the larger problem we're talking about here. An institution that says, "Well, I don't care if we have 90% of our students in a particular program be from one country. That won't impact us at all." Clearly, it has, and it sent one faculty member over the edge. And that's something that is part of the larger issue that institutions certainly need to get their heads around in terms of what they allow their academic programs to become, and to have some kind of quality control over who they're admitting and how they admit them. So that's those are the top two stories today. What I want to close with is something that you know, for those who know me for a while, virtual tours is something I've been involved in since my days with Education USA, and even back when I was on institutional campuses before that. Putting together walking tours of campus or video tours of campus has always been something that for international students is so valuable, because 95% of them don't come to campuses before they enroll because of their overseas ability to travel. So for virtual reality visits to U.S. schools. Certainly the technology has improved dramatically since the first days of shooting a video or on your campus and posting it on YouTube and such. But now there are 360 tours, there are virtual reality tours. U.S. Commercial Service has gotten on board with this recently with virtual education fairs. They've done those for a while. Education USA had partnered with College Week Live and now Platform Q Education on these kind of virtual college fairs in the past. But doing visits to U.S., virtual visits to U.S. colleges is an important part of what we think institutions need to be doing for their international audiences and parents, because they're important pieces of the puzzle too. So kudos to U.S. Commercial Services for being a part of this process. And I certainly think more institutions need to be doing this if they're not going to be, certainly if they're not going to be traveling overseas, need to make these kind of virtual visits possible for families to get a sense of what their student, son or daughter might be coming to see and live in for the next 4 years. So that's all we have for today on this week's Midweek Roundup. But I do encourage you all to both subscribe to our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And the links to those will be posted on the comment section on the Facebook page. But for a quicker access, go to smieconsulting.org to the subscribe link, and you'll be able to find a way to subscribe direct to see past editions of the newsletter to get the weekly digest that comes out Monday morning. So I wish you all, for those who are also listening on the podcast, thank you for that. Really good to see those numbers picking up in terms of people downloading the podcast weekly on your favorite iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, whatever you may be using to listen to podcasts. I'm glad you're checking us out and hope we're providing some valuable content to you. So I wish you all the best of luck in the weeks to come, and join us next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for next edition of the weekly roundup, midweek roundup. So thanks again and have a wonderful day.